We would like to welcome you to the November 20th, 2024 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of this commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation and use of areas having a special historical, cultural or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by the City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or non-profit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance are used by the Board to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new developments visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks that are within the Savannah local historic and conservation districts. The Board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance, items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangement of structures are not within the Board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Please turn off all cell phones. Members of the Board have received an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were any projects not properly posted this month?
I have a question about posting of signs.
Yes, ma'am. Can you state your name?
Virginia Mobley. Is there anything in the regulations about posting as to how visible a sign is? I know they have to be on the front. They have to be on the main street. But I'm talking about height and visibility from the street.
I don't believe there's anything in there related to the telling you it has to be, you know, 3 feet above the ground or 5 feet. If it's a corner lot, you're supposed to have one on, you know, both sides. But there's no specific requirement laid out in terms of, you know, 3 feet off the ground, 4 feet below the, or if that's your question.
Yes, that is.
Is it required that you have it on the, if you have a lane, required on the lane and the street? Yes.
Yeah.
So if you're on a corner lot, you actually have three.
Yes, you could have three.
Right?
Yes, correct. If you have a lane, yep.
Okay. Hearing no signs that weren't posted, we'll move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or a board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, folks?
Kathy Levine, I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Virginia Mobley, second.
All right, Virginia, your vote.
Pardon? Approved.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Motion passes. Okay. Adoption of the agenda. I need a motion to adopt the agenda today.
Kathy Levine, I make a motion to approve the adopted agenda.
Pat Richardson, approve. Pat Richardson, second.
Thank you. Virginia?
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Pat Richardson, approved.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of the previous meeting? If not, can I get a motion to approve the minutes, please?
Virginia Mobley, I make a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting of October the 23rd.
Look at the second.
Kirsten Connor, second.
Okay, Kirsten, your vote.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Okay. Are there any items listed that need to be removed from the final agenda? Okay, continued. These are items that have been continued or deferred to the next meeting or a date certain and that staff has determined incomplete at this time. Can I have a motion to approve the continued agenda, please?
Kirsten Connor, I motion to approve the continued agenda.
Pat Richardson, second.
And the vote, Virginia.
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Kathy Levine, approved.
Pat Richardson, approved.
Kirsten Connor, approved.
Motion passes. Is there any requests for extension? No? Okay. So we'll move on to the regular agenda. Applications that are submitted monthly appear on the agenda in the following order by district. Victorian District, Kyler Brownville District, Streetcar District, and Conservation Districts. Let's begin the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. The board asks the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested or granted by the chairperson. We will structure board discussion by calling on each board member for two rounds of two-minute comments or less. Board members are not required to comment. If you are joining us virtually, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise your hand feature, and I will be notified and will call on you by name. You may submit your name for the record, and you may comment. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. Okay. So, first thing on today's agenda, 1117 West 34th Street. Application 240, can't see that now, you've gone off. 2400-5663, rehab and alterations.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Jonathan Mellon. The application, as you noted, is for the property at 1117 West 41st Street. And so it always seems with Google that you end up with a giant shrub in front of the image. This is the house in question. I've had numerous conversations with the applicant, very nice gentleman. It's pretty simple application. Just to provide you with some context, this block of West 41st Street, we've been out there a few times, and what's interesting is that the block directly to the side actually has a number of, you know, contributing bungalows and some non-contributing ones. This block, the context is a little more varied. The structure in question is a non-contributing building. You can see there's a non-contributing newer building directly next to it. The owner has an existing carport. They were proposing to enclose that carport so that they could have a garage. Just going to go through here. So here's a photo up here. If you all can, let me see if I can zoom in and move up. But here's the carport on the side. Here's the house. The applicant is proposing to enclose the garage. There would be a garage door facing the street. Simple walls and a door at the rear. As I noted, the subject property was constructed in 1948. It's a non-contributing resource within the Kyler Brownville Historic District. Staff really only had two areas of comments for the applicant on this. Hold on a sec. Okay, go. Zoom in, go up. Staff is recommending approval for the conversion of the existing carport on the side of the building into an enclosed garage for the property located at 1117 West 41st Street with the following conditions because the work is otherwise visually compatible. One question related to the zoning. It looks like all the zoning works. We did have a question, though. Sorry, I keep having this. Related to lot coverage, and I believe the applicant is either here or will be available on the phone. Just to ensure that that is not an issue. Sorry, let me go back to our recommendation. And then on the submittal packet, which I'll go through, there's a door that's shown on the rear, and it's not indicated what material that door would be. So we're simply asking the applicant to say, you know, make sure it meets the standards in terms of, but the applicant will walk you through this. But again, what's being proposed here is converting this carport into a garage. And we'll just walk through it. Here's the house. Here's the carport. Here's some better photos than we had of the carport. We obviously don't trespass on people's properties, so we try to take ours from this public street. This is a view from the rear. This is a view underneath the carport. And so what the applicant is proposing to do is to enclose the carport. And there would be a garage door fronting the street. And as I noted, there would be a door on the rear elevation. It would have wood siding. And so with that, again, we are recommending approval. Just clarification that there are no variances needed in terms of lot coverage. And then just telling you all what the proposed material would be for that door. The door would not really be terribly visible, but we want to make sure it meets the standards, the rear door.
Questions?
Kathleen Vina. Is the plywood siding panel an acceptable material in the Kyler Brownville neighborhood?
Yeah, we talked about this as a staff, and yes, it is. Yes.
Run vertically?
Yes. Thank you for asking. Would you like me to turn it over?
Vina, one more question. Does it need a 12-inch overhang to meet the standards?
A 12-inch overhang of the...
of the garage? Typically, we need a 12-inch eave.
The roof? I believe the plan is to use the existing roof that's already there. But
so
that's something we can...
set. It's what's the setback between the, you know, on the eave? What's the...
See if,
I mean, it's hard to see in that.
Yeah, it's hard to
picture. And I just didn't know if that needed to be a requirement.
Yeah, you can see here, there's.
So it's going in the plane of the existing.
Yes, it will not be going further.
Siding.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So that maybe we'll turn it over to the applicant.
Yeah, please. Could the applicant step forward and state their name for the record, please?
It's Mr. Dunlap here. Online. Brett Dunlap. Okay, thank you.
Hello, this is Brett Dunlap. I'm the property owner of the house The two things that I guess I've been asked to address is the coverage. So I calculated the coverage of the house at 1,391 square feet. So that's the lot size is 4,300. So at 50%, I'm still way under the coverage of the lot. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and then secondly, the rear door, I was going to do a like a half light glass top with a steel, steel exterior door.
Does that meet the standard, Jonathan?
So,
can see before you for new construction alterations to non-contributing resources and additions. Doors shall be made of glass, wood, cladwood, or steel. Doors shall not have a decorative diamond or half moon inset. So those are the only two requirements for doors for non-contributing. So I'm sorry, Mr. Dunlop, could you say again the type of door you were proposing?
So a steel exterior door with a half light top.
You could do a half light as long as it's not a half moon.
Yes. A half light where okay. The top half of the door is glass.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Can we ask questions of the applicant?
Sure, please do.
Virginia Mobley, I just want to confirm that the roof line that is existing on the carport is going to be the roof line for the garage, proposed garage.
I'm not changing anything with the roof. The roof is in very good structural shape. The only problem is the iron supports on the right side. They're all rusted at the bottom. And, you know, I'm actually kind of amazed that it's still holding up. But, the roof and the ceiling, none of that will be changed.
I have a question for the applicant. So on the property tax record, the living area is 1,066 square feet. What was the proposed size of the garage?
It's 12 feet by 20 feet, so it's 240 square feet.
Okay, so it's still, okay.
Yeah. And then there's a front porch as well, which is 85 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy Levine, a question for the petitioner. Have you considered putting horizontal wood siding to enclose this space? The horizontal wood siding would relate back to your house in the porch gable, the front gable roof.
I didn't consider it, I mean, I can talk to my wife if she wants it. She's the one that wants the garage. But from the front side, there won't be much siding exposed. There's only the door. The garage door is going to take up most of the front. There's only about a foot on the left and about a foot and 4 inches on the right. So.
Yes, sir. I realize that. Again, I was just trying to relate this enclosed area back to your original existing house. And for visual compatibility, I think that relationship would be better served if it again related back to your existing home, which has horizontal wood siding. I would also ask that with this garage, you're covering really two windows plus your door. Has there been any consideration of adding windows so that you'll allow light into the garage, therefore allowing light into those portions of your existing home?
So the windows in the garage go to rooms that have other windows on other sides of the house. So the window and door, that's a bonus room. It's not even a bedroom because it doesn't have a closet. But there is a window on the south side of the house, which is the back side of the house. So they will have, you know, the rooms will have plenty of light from other windows.
I just was making sure you thought about that because it'll be really dark.
And then my main concern actually is making sure that the garage has enough light. So that's why I have the top of the garage door with some windows, and then the back door being a half light door, right? You know, half the door is window.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, is there any member of the public that would like to make a comment this time? Hearing none, I'll now open it up for board discussion. Virginia?
Virginia Mobley, no comment.
Kathy?
Kathy Levine, it's a non-contributing building. The driveway already violates the ordinance that state the vehicle access must be from the lane. They're not adding to the square footage. They're really just enclosing underneath an existing roof line. And there's no way they can access it from the lane either because of the shed. I've asked my questions, and I would like, I think it would be more visually compatible with the existing home if they were to add the horizontal siding versus the plywood siding panel. And it could be hardy plank or wood siding.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Kirsten Connor, it's a shame that Kyler Brownsville doesn't have a more extended period of significance. It's such a cute house. And enclosing carports was kind of a part of its evolution for these types of houses. But I have no comment and agree with staff conditions or staff approval.
Do any board members have any other comment to make? Okay, then I'll entertain a motion.
Virginia Mobley, I'd like a motion to approve staff's recommendation of 1117 West 41st Street, petition 24005663, with the staff recommendation for rehab and alteration to approve as presented with the following conditions. Provision one, that the information on the existing and proposed building coverage to ensure that the standard is met and no variance is required. Number two, to provide information on the proposed material for the single door on the rear elevation of the one-story side addition and closed garage to ensure that the standard is met.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Virginia, you vote.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Motion passes. Next, item number 10, petition of Estine Williams, 24005670, COA 2101 Ogeechee Road, amendment 2, 21006071.
Thank you, Chair. You guys know by now I like to pull up. So here's your property in question, 2101 Ogeechee Road. I'm sure you've all driven by here, or if you've come off some of the larger roads. This is a lovely corner property that has been undergoing restoration work. Predates my time here. What the applicant is requesting from you all is an amendment to a previous COA 21-006071 to allow for the continued rehabilitation of alterations. This would include work to the front porch, doors, windows, rear deck, siding, and roof. So there are a number of components here. Which the applicant, I believe, is going to be joining us virtually. But here's some photos to show you what the house looks like now. And I can zoom in here. I haven't been by there. But again, you can see a lot of the work has gotten underway. A lot of the siding has been either replaced or restored. There has been some work done to the front porch. There is a small rear deck, which I'll talk about in a minute, that has been put on the rear of the property. overall, staff is very supportive of the continued efforts of this owner to restore this important contributing building. It always drives me a little nuts, to be honest. We are recommending approval for the amendment to 21-006071. There are quite a few conditions, and I know normally both you all and the HDBR do not like staff recommendations when there are a lot of conditions. But the applicant, we've had a number of conversations with the applicant. She's fantastic and has expressed her willingness to work with staff. So I just want to walk through each of these with you so you get an understanding of what our areas of concern are and what we just want to see are addressed. The first condition is to provide further clarification on the proposed scope of work related to the front porch. We want to make sure that the historic fabric is retained and appropriate mortar repair work is done. As I'm sure you all have seen when you walk around the city of Savannah, often we see masonry work being done incorrectly. And so the applicant has expressed a willingness to work with us to ensure that we'll be notified when that work is going to be getting underway. Caitlin's an expert in reviewing all this. And Kelly, as you know, used to do inspections in Nashville. So we would all go out there and just make sure, not just for this item, but really want to make sure the masonry is done right for the front porch. In addition, additional clarification in terms of the wood windows. As you know, the ordinance requires that historic wood windows be retained and restored. If they can't be retained and restored, that the replacement windows have to be wood windows to match the historic character of this contributing building. So that's something that we would also work closely with the applicant on. The third item relates to the siding. As you probably know, we get a lot of applications for siding replacement. And Kelly's done a great job on a number of these where, you know, we've gone out and met with owners and said, you know, many contractors will say to a property owner, you may have had this said to you all, you know, if you have a siding contractor come out, they're going to say, let's replace all the siding. That's not very often needed. And we always encourage and require applicants to preserve and restore as much of the original historic siding. Sometimes the siding can be taken off, and if there's only a little bit left that can be saved, you know, you put it together and you use it on the front elevation. There are ways that can be done. So that's another thing that we'd be working on closely with the applicant, because we can go back to those photos, but as you can see, there's already been considerable work done on that. The fourth, we just need more clarification on what's being proposed for the roofs. The existing roofing material is not historic, so that wasn't an area of concern, but we just needed clarification about the rafters, the soffit, the eaves, fascia boards. There is quite a bit of intact historic fabric here, and we want to make sure that when this rehabilitation restoration is done, that as much of that historic fabric is kept and not replaced. And then the final condition is an actual, just straight out, pretty straightforward. Since this is a contributing building, the proposed doors should be wood. They would have been wood historically, as we all know. This is a building from 1921. So they should be replaced with wood windows, with wood doors, I should say, in order to meet the standards. And also the design, we were just having this discussion a minute ago. This is a building that's also in the Kyler Brownville Historic District. You can't have the half moon kind of what I call the Home Depot look on doors. So we would need to work with the applicant to ensure that the design is compatible. And I will just walk you through quickly. So this was a bit of a, to be candid, we did get a written project description. As we said, the applicant has been wonderful to work with. But at first, some of the information that was provided was perhaps not super clear in terms of what was actually going to be happening. Just for example, it says As you can see, the third bullet point, windows are to be repaired and broken panes will be replaced. Windows which cannot be repaired will be replaced with same or similar windows. So that's, again, a little bit vague. So we wanted to make sure of that, that was being done. And then this was, in terms of the roof, I talked about it before, the roofing material, but it talks about all rotten wood rafters, soffits, eaves, and fascia will be replaced. We would want to take a closer look to make sure that it's not just wholesale being, you know, removed if it doesn't have to be. I have some, these are from the applicant. We thank the applicant. This is a view of the front porch. So again, here's, you have a brick base and steps. Want to make sure that the mortar work is done correctly, both in terms of protecting the brick, but also just visually. We've all seen it done well and not done so well. This is side elevation. You can see that there has been a lot of siding replacement. We want to try to keep as much historic siding as possible. There's still quite a bit of it on there. And then this is that rear deck that was approved under a previous, and it looks to meet your conditions from before, where basically you wanted that rear deck to be able to be removed without negatively impacting the historic form of the building. And I think they've done that quite successfully. So again, we have a number of conditions here, but we feel as a staff, even though there are five conditions, they're all related to really granular details and details that we all, the three of us, have a great deal of experience in working on, and we think we can work those out with the applicant.
Anybody have questions with staff?
Kirsten Connor. Have you, because I didn't look at what the previous COA approved was exactly.
Sure.
For the windows on the, I guess it would be the east side of the house, the right side on that facade. It looks like some of the openings were changed. And one window opening was taken out, and then the molding and caps detail of the window frames were taken out and not replaced. So I was wondering if you guys had taken a look at that or discussed it with the applicant.
We have discussed with the applicant that when we are hopefully going to be meeting out at the site, we're going to go in depth through what was approved and if any there have been. Again, we noticed some things that maybe you're bringing up. We appreciate that, Kirsten, that might deviate from what was approved. We obviously don't go on people's property. So, but we will, in terms of what you all approved, there were, as you can see before you, four conditions, related to the first one, as I was noting, the rear porch, the second one, rear deck, doors, which again is, you know, is what we were just talking about, and railings and so on and so forth. But it's a thank you, Kirsten. We do need to, there are a lot of moving parts with this one, and we're trying to be as helpful to the property owner as possible. So we're going to go out with a hard set, of the approved plans, the stamp plans, so we can walk around the site with the owner, look at each elevation, see if there are any issues. The applicant has expressed a willingness to address any potential deviations, shall we say.
Do you happen to have those plans handy?
I do not have them, but I can send them to you if you'd like.
I can look them up later.
Yeah, I mean,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kathy Levina, I was just making sure that the rhythm of the brackets are included with the rafter, soffit, eaves, and fascia.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. It's just a pretty unique feature.
Yep. Thank you. I believe the applicant is online and. Is Dean Williams? Ms. Williams here? I believe she was registering for the meeting, but I did connect with her this morning and shared the staff report with her. She seemed, I don't want to speak for her, but fine with it.
Amenable. Is there any public comment then if the petitioner isn't available? If the answer is no, you can guess. Yeah, sure.
Sorry, I was confused for a second.
Okay, no worries.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC is excited to see this property being restored. However, we would like to advocate for a continuance due to the petition's lack of information and the number and extent of staff's recommendations.
Okay. Any other public comment today? Hearing none, I will now open it up for board discussion. Virginia.
Virginia Mobley. My only comment is I am very glad to see something moving forward in a positive way on this project. I was very afraid a year and a half ago that it was going to just sit there and fall down. But I think the recommendations of staff are all within a doable scope of the work.
Kathy
Levina, I agree with Kirsten about the window fenestration pattern. I think the historic fenestration pattern must be maintained. If the petitioner were here, I would recommend and want to find out if she's painting versus staining the building. Victorian houses typically had painted exteriors. You know, there's body color, a trim color, an accent color, and maybe even a bonus color thrown in there. It's a flagship property on Ogeechee. It would be, you know, just wonderful if she would, which would paint it versus the staining. You look at staining, and that's a characteristic that you would find on craftsman-style homes, maybe colonial revival homes. On Victorian homes, typically the staining would occur in the interior.
Pat?
Pat Richardson, I agree with the recommendations of staff. However, I really would like to see a continuance because there are too many items where they need more clarification on. And if we pass this now, then, you know, it's just too many items that need clarification. But I'm glad to see something being done with this property because it's been sitting there dormant and looking pretty bad for a long time.
Kirsten Connor, I would also like to ask for a continuance on this. I just have concerns about the window openings. That's my biggest concern. And I would like the staff to have an opportunity to go out there and discuss with the applicant and be able to come back with us to have clearer understanding of what.
Okay, so it appears we have the petitioner online. So I guess we can open some questions up from the board to the petitioner while they have an opportunity.
Okay, now.
Hello, this is Darren Bagley Heath with the Cultural Affairs, the Cultural Historic Preservation Commission. Wrong board. Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Hi, this is Estine Williams, the owner of the property in question.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Our board has some questions regarding the recommendations for you, so they're gonna identify themselves and ask you some questions. We actually have kind of reviewed your proposal already, so we're now in the deliberation process. So,
okay.
Virginia, do you have any questions?
No.
No? Okay. Kathy?
Kathy Levine, my question is, what do you propose to do on the exterior of the property, paint or stain?
I was planning to stain it, and there's some painting trim. I was going to use trim for paint. So there will be paint and staining.
Is So I'm not sure if you heard my previous comment. Were you online then?
I think I was back online then. I kind of got kicked off for a second or two, a few minutes.
That I stated that Victorian homes typically are painted, and not only are they painted one color, but they're really painted quite elaborately, three colors, if you would, a body color, a trim color, and maybe even a bonus color. And this house is such an important historic building along Ogeechee that I really believe, to maintain the character of the building, that it should be painted. And if you like the darker colors of the stain, you're in luck, because, again, Victorian homes typically were painted dark, rich colors that were inspired by nature.
Okay. Well, I was planning a stain, but it's like a honey kiss. It's sort of like a brown, so it's kind of got keeping it kind of like you could see the wood, because it's going to be transparent, clear too, but a honey kiss stain. So the stain would still preserve the wood color, and it's not like a deep, dark stain. It's not like a black or dark brown, but it's a brown tone and white along with some black. And I was planning to do some painting on the wood, because I mean, not the wood, but the eave, you know, the portion of the house that goes the brick portion of the house. I was planning to paint some of that.
Kathy Levina, I just think if you have a gem of a property, and I would encourage you to research Victorian homes and their characteristics, and see what painting can really bring this property to life. Typically, you see stain on craftsman style houses and colonial revival homes. Mm-hmm. It's just something to consider.
Okay. But it's not really like a part of the ordinance that I have to stain it or I have to paint it, correct?
Correct. Yes, Mr. Okay. We do not regulate in your historic district.
I called the society to find out whether I can stain or do I have to paint, and is there any ordinances in regards to that, and they told me no. So I selected, because I spoke to the contractor in regards to staining, and I think it'll probably meet your approval of how I plan to stain it. It's not like it's taken away from, and then, you know, later if I decide to do more painting or anything for the exterior, I was planning to maybe paint it later, but I think originally for the preservation of showing the wood for it, it'll be kind of like a unique situation, whereas it is stained in some areas and trimmed in paint in other areas. So it's not like it's going to continually be painted, won't be ostracized. I'm not saying I won't even think about it, but right now I'm looking at it because I wanted to preserve the natural color of the wood more than just putting the paint over it. We can do that 10 times after a stain or something was clearing. That's why I considered that instead of just originally painting it, just because. You understand what I'm saying? So some areas I won't be able to stain because it already has paint on it. So the areas under the ceiling of the porch, I can't stain that area because it's the original wood and it's all painted already. So the paint is kind of falling and shabby, but that can be remedied with more paint or more sanding or whatever that needs to be done to adjust to the surface.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody else got a question for the petitioner? Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Pat Richardson, of the five items that staff has recommended, I'm noticing that four of them requires additional clarification. Have you worked towards any of these clarifications?
You're meaning, because you asked about the doors should be wood. Originally, what my original contract or application stated was that the doors could be steel doors. That's what was on the agenda, because that what was on the property when I first got it. I only had the other door on the left, on the right side of the property where there's a extra porch. That area was a wooden door that was completely rotten and shabby. We had to remove that. Yeah. So on the front, it was originally a steel door with the, I think you said the half moon windows when I heard that earlier. But I didn't really change anything. I put a regular door, but it's a full glass on that door, but it's a steel door. So that's what I replaced it with, another steel door. I didn't put a wood door there. So there's no wood doors. All of the doors that are on this house is steel doors with windows, a half window, and there's the original front door that was on there before is the same kind of front door applied to the side. It's a steel door. That is what I did have. The other clarification, you asked about the rafters for the roof. Is that correct?
Yes, that's one of them.
Some of the eaves and the soffits will remain exactly the same as they were. Some I had to take out because they were completely like rotten and the roof was kind of like falling in some areas and falling off in the back area. So I had to kind of replace a whole lot of that completely because it wasn't safe. You couldn't even walk in that area. I'm trying to figure what else. But I think I put on this form about having the roof material being used as shingles instead of having the metal roof. With any event, I have to come again and replace that roof because right now I still have some issues with my roof and the roofer. So that's what I'm still working on right there. So there's a roof up there that doesn't allow the water to come in or anything like that. But to continue, I think I'm probably going to have to still adjust to that. Still, and may have to replace that roof. So I still want it to be clarified that I want to, if I have to replace that roof again or do anything with the roof, I want to make it known whether I can put architectural shingles on there instead of putting a metal roof again.
So staff is recommending on the doors that you replace with wooden doors, but you said you're using steel doors?
Yeah, because that was in my original application. That was on there, and that was before. Beforehand. That's why I'm asking now.
So let me ask one question of staff at this point in time. So because they replaced the steel doors and that was previously approved, does that mean that still pertains if we're changing the COA now, or where do we stand with that?
We need to – thank you, Ms. Williams. I think what we need to do is meet with the applicant at the site, review everything in terms of the original approval. Steel doors would not be appropriate for this building. It's a contributing building. If this were a non-contributing building.
But they were approved on the last COA, correct?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so what we need to do then is...
I think the applicant may have been saying that there had been steel doors and they were replaced in kind.
Okay.
But not that they were approved to be replaced. Okay. Does that make sense?
Okay, so at this point, it appears you want to have, well, do you want to do this or do we want to continue it and then come back at a later date?
Darren, can I ask a question?
Well, let Kirsten ask hers and then we'll come back and we'll go back around. That's fine.
Kirsten Connor, this is for the applicant. I did notice that the window openings have changed. And I was wondering if you wanted to address that. That was not approved in your past application. And typically we would not approve that.
Could you explain what do you mean by the window openings have changed?
It appears that from the photos I'm looking at and, I think it's the right side. I'm not sure what direction that is. There had been four windows on towards the rear and now there's three. And then the opening size of the windows had changed for a couple of them.
Okay. You said, okay. There's four windows on the right
openings.
Okay. The size has changed.
The sizes and there are missing openings that were originally there.
Okay. Okay. One was, I know I took out one window because it was in, It was going to be one window too many in that area because it was on the inside. It was changed over from a hallway into a bedroom. So in that bedroom, it'll be a closet, and the window would have been in a closet, I think it is. And so that's why I did take that window out. It was one window that was taken out. On the that was the one that you had three, and there was now it's two instead of being three in that same spot. But the only thing they never changed the size of the windows. Is that they did the framing and then they came back and put the same windows back in the area, but some of the window supports that go over the window, I think they call them headers or something like that. They had to be redone because it was rotting out from termites. It had eaten up the wood, so they replaced with new wood and went over those headers because it was falling. It was like falling on that whole side. I have a problem with the building was starting to shift and the whole back had fell off before. So I was having a problem with code compliance and they were saying I wasn't doing anything, but the interior had to be restructured on the inside, on the back side, that area where you're speaking of the windows where it was falling back off of the whole building. And so I had to get that restructured and foundation place replaced. And some of the supports were not standing, not holding up. So I had a lot of wood that had to be replaced and a lot of foundation stuff that had to be done and support for the building because it would have crashed in. So that's where I don't see any changes in the window sizes that I can't see that I didn't see because they did put the old windows back in that could be used and they tried to structure some of the windows into as like repairing them and re-putting new wood in them because they weren't going to be able to be utilized. So some of it wasn't being able to be utilized. And in fact, I was asking, I asked some people who were doing historic houses about the windows. So they said that in other houses that they're able to buy, these genuine windows that are not completely all wood, but they have some wood, I guess, in between or whatever, but I don't know. I don't know exactly other windows, but I saw them and they're like, you know, I think about close to $1,000 a piece, but I was just checking with you guys and then they said, well, I was still steadily trying to replace those windows and repair and restore those windows that we have. So we've been looking into the windows. The windows have been the issue of finding them and, you know, trying to replace the same exact windows into the property. So I didn't change it. The only window I did put a new window. That window was definitely in an place if it needs to be replaced, but that's where we took that window out because it falls on the interior into a closet room for the setting.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for explaining so thoroughly. Unfortunately, that usually is not something we would still approve, but I think it would be best that a conversation with MPC is had so we can get more understanding and you can get more understanding. But I appreciate you answering my question so thoroughly. Also, I appreciate the work that you have done on the house. It's wonderful to see this still standing. I'm happy for the future of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
Virginia.
You.
Virginia Mobley, my question was concerning the windows and passing that house on a regular basis. I realized that one of the windows was missing, but I don't think that the size of the openings have actually changed. What's missing in the photographs we're seeing is the trim that will go around them and enclose them. But that's just my take on it. So since we've discussed the windows, we don't need to go further.
Kirsten Connor, I think we just need to have MPC go out and look at it. The staff go out and look at it. But I do know that there are some that have changed. And there, I think, are at least two openings missing.
But two openings are missing, you say?
So, okay, so is there any other board discussion at this point in time?
I'm going to further reiterate the brackets on the soffit brackets, because especially since the petitioner stated that some were removed, mm-hmm. not replaced. I think, again, it's a very character-defining detail, and it needs to be included within the recommendations.
The soffit brackets, could I get clarity on what you mean by your soffit brackets? Are you speaking of the design, that the fancy design, the trim that goes up to the top of the soffit all the way around the house? Like there's like 1, 2, 3 in a couple, then there you'll see another 2 in another spot, and then another 3 in another spot like that. So are you speaking of those?
I am.
It's like, okay. They've been replaced. Some of them had to be replaced because they were just like tossed down and the wood was just kind of like crumbling. So it wasn't holding up upstairs. So we tried to replace them in the like fashion of what it was before. So we're still working on it. So it's still going to be some trim that has to be done to that. So that is being worked on. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I think it's prudent that we move forward. People are in agreement. I think the continuance is probably the best course of action. So I need somebody to make a motion to continue that so staff can get some clarification and we can make a better decision at a later date. My microphone's on, yeah.
Capulet Vina, I make a motion to continue the petition. I move that the HPC continue the petition of 21-00607-1-COA. Miss Estine Williams, the address 2101 Ogeechee Road. Until, what, do you think 2 months? 2 months, 60-day extension to address the concerns the HPC had and bring a more complete application back to the board for review.
Pat Richardson, my second motion.
Thank you.
Virginia.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Motion passes. Okay, next. 615 West 40th, 24005730, contributing demolition and rehab alterations.
As already been stated, the applicant has requested an approval to make alterations to and rehabilitate 615 West 40th Street, as well as demolished 616 West 40th Lane. The full scope of work is provided in the staff report and in the application. So the first part of this will be the discussion of the demolition of 616 West 40th Lane. This is considered a contributing building in Kyler Brownville. As you can see, the building did experience a devastating fire that damaged a good portion of the building itself. Staff found that the standards were met for the demolition of this building given its current condition. Staff also found that if the applicant is required to stabilize and restore the existing building, a good portion of what's remaining will need to be removed because of the fire. It's also worth noting that staff did talk to development services about this project. This property is kind of unique in that there are basically two single family dwellings on one lot. If this building is demolished, this building basically cannot be rebuilt as it is because the zoning district does not allow two single family buildings on one property. So it's kind of keep that in mind. So with that, staff recommends the demolition of this building and recommends that it be documented as best it can per the city's policy, as well as any of the remaining historic fabric be salvaged if at all possible. Second part of this project is a rehabilitation and alteration of 615 West 40th Street. The work includes the siding and window replacement, as well as the addition of new windows on the back portion of the home. Overall, the work does meet the standards. There's just one minor condition that the applicant confirmed the size of the mullions on the new windows. So with that, staff recommends approval of the alterations and rehabilitation of 615 West 40th Street and the demolition of 616 West 40th Lane with the following conditions: because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meet the standards, one, rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed and the material salvaged if possible, that the demolition comply with the policy for document buildings over 40 years old for 616 West 40th Lane, and the applicant provide them unsized but new windows. Does the board have any questions or concerns?
No questions at this time.
Kathy?
Waiting here from the petitioner.
No questions.
Kirsten, no questions.
Is the petitioner available?
I believe so.
Please step forward and state your name for the record.
Jerome Aldo with JL The Studio. Good afternoon, everyone. As was explained by staff, we are looking forward to seeing this building get rehabilitated. After working with the owner and also looking at it, it's unfortunate that the rear building did get burned because it was something that was in the process of being renovated and rehabilitated, and it was considered contributing previously. However, we do need to make sure that it is secured, and that's why we do need to address the demolition. And we agree with all staff comments, so we'll try our best to see what can be deconstructed. A lot of it has been sitting weathered. This is a new property owner. They recently acquired it as of September of this year. So it's been sitting and slowly deteriorating with the weather for the past few years. So we'll do the best that we can. And that's all I have. Any questions from the board?
Virginia Mobley, I have a question. And looking at the San Juan maps, it appears that there is a something that divides the property into two structures, I mean two lots.
Correct.
Is that, yeah, look, there's a double line there. Was it divided?
It was previously divided.
It was previously, so has it ever been recombined?
I think it is recombined now. It is one now. The current owners are considering looking at the opportunity to recombine it, and they would like to reconstruct the structure. But what we do need to do first is address the demolition of it, because it is definitely a hazard.
Okay. And my other question was, if you get the demolition and you start reconstruction, is that footprint going to be continued into the new construction, or are you using a new footprint for that addition to the back?
Their intent would be to do the same footprint in that case, but that would be coming back as a separate submission, because we're not doing a reconstruction or a new build in this petition. This is simply for the demolition of that portion, that rear building, and then the rehabilitation of the one that faces the street.
So basically today what you're asking for is the permission to demolish, and then we will look at a design.
Yes, for the...
They're also doing a rehab on the other building that's on that lot though as well.
Yes.
So it's a demolition of one.
But if they're going to have one building...
No.
No, to be...
No, so no. The city won't allow them to build a second building at this point because it's not buildable.
Correct.
They have to appeal that. So what they're asking to do is tear that building down and rehab the building that is still standing in good condition. That's what the application is today.
Yes.
But doesn't the new existing building that they're going to rehab, isn't there going to be an addition on the back of
no,
that?
No. There is no addition.
Okay.
We are rehabilitating that building using the appropriate materials historically. We're changing out all the existing vinyl windows to wood windows. We're doing everything that is needed to rehabilitate this structure appropriately.
Kathy?
Kathy Levina, I went over to the block, mm-hmm. and it's really a new house. It's going to be a great project. And it's the house is certainly a craftsman bungalow, and it's not only is the house standalone, but it's part of, you know, the block. Correct. And the whole block has several, they have several styles of craftsman bungalows and craftsman two stories. So it's an integral part of the block. I don't know if we can Google map it. And so I've got a couple of questions. I'm obviously concerned about the historic materials on the existing house. When I went there, it looks as if that there's a hardy plank siding or some sort of.
So we are replacing all of those. I'm not sure if you got the chance to look fully into the.
I can't go inside. But so the hard, when I saw that. So this hardy plank, hardy on board siding. Then there's asbestos siding, which needs to be, disposed of correctly.
Correct.
But then underneath that, I saw some historic siding. And so my question to you is, would you be willing to peel off those two layers and see what existing historic siding is actually in place before the wholesale removal or covering up of the hardy plank siding? I saw it. I saw historic siding underneath
those
two layers. You have to peel the onion sometimes.
I believe that is what we're doing. Is there a way to get the petition so I can zoom into the elevation, please?
And if we did see historic siding, as was pointed out in a previous project, it's recommended that you use that historic siding on the front facade. I'm not sure, again, if you peeled it back to see what's going on with the gable. I don't know if there's a window up there.
So for us, yes, we want to match. I understand because it is that smaller siding, I believe.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's something that we've discussed with it, and that's what we're intending to address.
And keeping the historic siding and then
correct.
Putting that on the front?
Correct.
Okay.
Well,
great.
It depends on the condition of mm-hmm. that historic siding because that building has sat empty and there's a big question as to the condition of it, but we
correct.
Will do our best.
I understand that. I just, I would like, before you do anything, I'd like you to peel back those layers and have staff come by and look and see what can be salvaged. The porch supports, of course, there are a whole bunch of different designs on the street. And
yes.
The ones that you've proposed, I think, are fine because they're not replicas.
No.
I'm not sure, you know, that one, the one raised in the center, there's an existing porch support, and your drawing doesn't show a porch support. I don't know. It would just be fun to investigate that further and maybe see what you find. Exposed rafters, with the craftsman style house, the design for the roof wall junction, that's like the most important really distinctive feature. So I don't know if you looked to see what the rafter tails look like. It's typically never boxed in or anything like that. I was wondering what you proposed for the wide overhang eaves.
You can
look at the wood siding that's there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a lot of them across the street with the rafter tiles. That's what you're proposing right there?
Yes, I think that's
okay.
something
Great.
That we can consider.
Yeah, there's a piece of wood trim over there, but you can tell that was added because
yes.
it doesn't even line up in the ends. Okay, great. So that's another question of mine. I'm hurrying. 3, 4, 5. Windows. Your design calls for 2/2, and I looked at my What Style Is It book to look at the windows for a craftsman style house, and I don't see 2/2. And I looked at the windows on the other craftsman bungalows, and they're all 1/1, or they have some sort of stylized sash on the front, and then just a plain open window, one pane window on the bottom.
I think
we considered using 1/1.
I think we can, and we can potentially do the 2/1 as well. It all depends, but we can discuss that with them. We're very much open to it.
Okay, great. And those are all my questions for you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great project.
Thank you.
Pat Richardson, so I'm not sure if my question's for you or for staff, but when Kathy mentioned, can you use the historic siding? And then she mentioned something about asbestos being over it as well. Can you salvage deciding if it's got asbestos on it?
It depends on, no. Yes. The short answer is yes. Okay. It all depends.
Okay.
Do and further then, exploration.
Okay. And then when it said, you said you're going to tear down the part that's on fire, right? That burned down.
That building, yes.
Okay. Correct. And you said, you mentioned that, are you going to do anything with it later?
There is a plan to reconstruct the building that would have been there previously, but that's not part of this submission. So.
What kind of guarantee do we have that you are going to reconstruct the way it was before and not come up
really
with a whole new build?
We can't give you any guarantee at this point. We still have to work through with development services, see if it's even possible. Okay. As it stands right now, and we have to demolish it because it is
right.
An unstable structure within this area. So code compliance, everyone will be on us for it.
Right.
We will hope to do that. But I can't give you a guarantee at this point until we have those discussions.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kirsten Connor, I think this is such a cute house. I'm excited to see it rehabilitated. I agree with Kathy about maybe going with 1/1.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick Google Street View. I didn't see any 2/2s, not to say that it didn't originally have that. I feel like I was going to say something else. Hold on. Has there been any investigation to a transom having existed? And it's hard to see
above
from photos.
The door,
yeah.
No. We did not see any, and I don't know if we would have been able to even fit one with the roof line.
Yeah.
So I don't think.
I have a feeling the roof might have been lowered at some point.
Yeah.
But I was just curious. I can see why you wouldn't be able to put that back in. Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to make a comment at this time?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC would like to be on record in support of staff's recommendation. Our revolving fund committee actually reviewed this property as a potential revolving fund property. So we're happy to see it under new ownership and receiving the sensitive rehabilitation that it desperately needs.
Is there anybody else that would like to make public comment? No? Now we'll go to board discussion. Virginia?
Virginia Mobley, no questions, comments.
Kathy, you got anything else to contribute?
No, just that I would like to see the applicant work with staff. I'm peeling off, again, the hardy plank and the asbestos and seeing what siding and what other features might be exposed that can be restored as character-defining features of this historic home. And then, of course, the rafters, the exposed rafters, which the applicant said they were doing, and then 1/1.
But.
Pat Richardson, I agree with Kathy and staff. I agree with Kathy on trying to restore as much of what's there that we can. And I agree with the recommendations of staff.
Kirsten Connor, I echo that.
Okay. Any other comment? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Kathy Ledvina, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of, give me a second, J.L. Yes, I don't have it. Where is it? I know your name.
J.L. Studios.
J.L. Studios. 615 West 40th Street, 24-005730-C0A, with the following conditions. One, two, and three per staff, and then four, work with staff, and
remove the hardy plank and the asbestos siding to determine if there are any character-defining features beneath, and with an especial, I guess, emphasis on historic site wood siding. And then two, look at adding the one over one windows, and three, or actually four, five, six, expose the rafters on the east and west overhangs, or as indicated, once further exploration of the building has determined.
Kirsten Connor, second.
Virginia
Mobley, approve.
Kathy Labino, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Motion passes. At this point, I'm turning over the gavel to Ms. Kathy, as I have more cases I have to attend.
Thank you. Kathy Levina, continuing forward with the application of 610 West 36th Street. Juan, Yuskatek, help me. Thank you. 24-005737-C0A. New construction, small part ones and two, one and two, and the special exemption request.
Thank you, Jonathan Mellon again. This project will probably seem familiar to all of you. This is for proposed new construction of a one-story freestanding frame home on a vacant lot. This is the site in question where you see the person sitting. We've been out to the site a number of times. It's a lovely block. It's one of the streets that still has the brick paving and a wonderful collection of different houses. It has some both contributing and non-contributing buildings. But again, to give you some context here, it's going to be going right here on this site. So I'm going to walk you through, and I'm sure you all know Juan, who's been before you. But again, what's being proposed here on this rather narrow lot is a single family house that will have access, pedestrian access from West 36th Street at the front, and from with a walk up the front porch. And then at the rear, the driveway access for parking will be off of the lane, which is obviously meets the standards. And if you look again, back at this block, we were very pleased to see that the access for the cars would be off the lane, because that is, although some people might think it's a minor design detail, it really does impact the feel of a street if historically did not have driveways and then you start adding driveways. So we commend the applicant for that. This is a design that you all are familiar with, that you've seen before. It's almost a shotgun style house with a small covered front porch. These are the two side elevations. And I'm just going to go through Juan's packet a little bit. And he can go through it a little bit more. But again, this is the site in question, vacant lot. Staff is recommending approval for the proposed new construction, small parts one and two, for the vacant lot at 610 West 36th Street. We do have a number of conditions, and then I'm going to circle back and talk about the special exceptions. The first condition is a request for confirmation of the proposed details of the front side porches in order to meet the standards, or in alternatively request a special exception. Number two, confirm the proposed materials for the doors in order to again meet the standards or request a special exception. And number three, confirm that the front porch handrails are 4 inches on center. Number four, confirm that no exterior lighting is being proposed. We did not see any. And then there was a question about the fencing. Confirm that the proposed chain link side yard fencing, link fencing would not be visible from the street. And if it were to be visible, have it be of wood in order to meet the standards. And then there are the two special exception requests that you all have seen before for these houses. The first one relates to the requirement that the exterior expression of the height of the first floor should not be less than 11 feet. And so what the applicant is requesting is a special exception from that. And the second one, so that's to allow for a four-story exterior expression of 10 feet as opposed to 11 feet. The second one relates to, and I'll circle back, those side elevations. I know we've discussed this with you all before. There's a requirement that for 30% transparency on side elevations that are visible from a public right-of-way. And Juan can walk you through this. I know he's done it before. I just go back. Sorry. Wow. Here we go. So again, this is the front and rear elevations, very narrow house. But these are the side elevations where under the ordinance, there's a requirement for 30% transparency. Obviously, that's not being met. And so the applicant is requesting a special exception for both of those elevations, I believe. And with that, if you don't have any questions, I can turn it over to the applicant.
Are there any questions for staff? No questions for staff. Will the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. This is Juan Uzcategui with Savannah Local Initiative. We are the current owner of the property. For us, this project represents an opportunity to continue our effort providing high quality, affordable housing in that community. We are working with the staff on the recommendations and open to any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions for the petitioner?
Virginia Mobley, as we discussed before, the penetrations of the windows on the sides of the house are lacking. If you look at the existing similar size houses in that area, they have multiple windows down the side penetrations. It is a life safety issue. And I can't go along with reducing the penetration. Have you considered, as we discussed on previous occasions of you being here, adding windows?
First, what I want to say is, and I have my architect with me, we feel we are covering standards on code on windows. And for us, it's kind of hard to continue building these projects because adding more windows will increase our cost for these houses, and it will be hard for the people that are going to purchase the houses. If we don't keep the prices that we are having right now, it will be harder for them to get these houses and for us to keep it affordable. But as I said, and I have Jenny is with me, that we understand that we have or we are on the standards of Windows according with the code. Yeah. So basically, I'm going to show here, we have the Windows here, right here. We have one here, two. One more here. And there is one more window here. So we basically have windows in every room, except I would say just this bathroom right here.
So what happens if a 10-year-old child gets trapped in that bathroom? Is it worth the cost of a window?
I think there's still, you know, for me, that my point of view is still, the way that I see, I think it's still is enough windows. I mean, there is not too much space from the bathroom to to the master bedroom in that case, for example, or to the kitchen to leave to find the exit on the front door, on the side door that we are including in this floor plan. I understand your point, and I is just saying that as I think we offer, you know, enough. We offer two doors for exit, and we offer windows in almost all of the rooms in the house, which I consider enough.
Okay, Virginia? Kathy Levine, my quick question is, just to make sure, and we cover this every time you present, that all of the columns will have bases and capitals?
Yes, correct.
Including the one on the side? It's not shown in the drawing.
Which one?
The far one on the, I can't, go to the next drawing, please.
Oh.
Right side elevation.
It's not here, but yeah, we will include it.
Then you have the basing cap.
Yeah.
And then the chain link fence, are you going to be able to see that from the lane and the front of the house?
Well, we will meet the standards that they are requesting, the staff is requesting. We will it's not maybe in this plan, but we will work with them to meet the standards.
And that includes the lane, correct?
You can have the chain link on the lane.
Can?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the petitioner? Hearing none, are there any members of the public that would like to comment? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ted Reynolds. I stay at 608 West 36th Street on the own with my mother. And that property, we worked that property for 50 years. We stayed there and played on that. And the city never came out but probably two or three times to clean that lot. And after my daddy retired, you know, about 25 years ago, it was a grant down to the city for the kids. He went down there and it's the Kyler Brown Bridge. The task force for the young kids, and they clean up in the neighborhood, and we paid them with that money. And after the program was over, probably about 10 years ago, something along in there, the guy said that property was too small to build on. And he asked, could they build a playground there? And he said, no, couldn't build one because down at the Heritage Place, the Charity Hospital, it was one down there. So he said, well, what I can do, put a private property sign up there where you and your family can park on that property. And that's what he did. So we was parking on there after, you know, my dad passed about in 18. So I kept the land up. He said, as long as you keep the land up, that's what your family can do, stay on that land and do that. But apparently when they came out and surveyed, was doing the survey, I was, you know, wanting to know whether that land large enough to build on it when they say it wasn't. And they wouldn't put a playground there. So they did that, the parking for us. That's what he said, the guy who was over the program. Over. So I'm wondering if that land big enough. I even called the city and asked about it. And she told one of the ladies on the phone, said, yeah, it is too small.
All right, thank you for bringing that to our attention. I don't believe this board can answer that or address that issue. Help me out.
Yes, so let me go back to you. Thank you, sir.
This is a land bank property?
Yes. So, yes, we do. We always include a section related to zoning. We did talk with our colleagues in development services. This is what is known as a legal non-conforming lot of record. Development is allowed. Juan could probably tell you the scale, but as you can see from, if you look at the floor plans, this is a very modestly scaled house. It is a developable, it is allowable to build a house on the lot. And this would obviously, sir, just so you know, this would have to still go through review by all the city's Savannah's relevant agencies in turn, and including zoning review, where they will obviously make sure that it's, you know, meets certain standards.
And I'm not sure when that ordinance changed, but it did change. Those unbuildable lots became buildable to encourage infill housing. I'm not sure when, though.
Pat Richardson. Jonathan, can you explain the first special exception to me?
I'm sorry?
Can you explain staff's first special exception to me?
Sure. So the first one, if you look at our ordinance, it says the exterior expression of the height of the first story shall not be less than 11 feet, and the height of the upper story shall not be less than 9 feet. This is obviously a one-story building, so it doesn't matter about the second part of that sentence. The applicant is requesting an exterior expression of 10 feet. And staff, in looking at this, there have been many other one-story buildings where you do have an exterior expression of 10 feet. So staff felt that was a reasonable request.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Would the petitioner, or if there's a representative from the city or the land bank, like to address the petition, the public's, I was going to see if they could address his concern. Is there a member of the city or the land bank here? No. All right. Are there any other public comments?
I just want to say there is no any city or land bank member.
Thank you.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC would also like to suggest that additional windows be placed on the side elevation of this residence to allow more natural light and be more visually compatible with the surrounding context. We would also like to request that the petitioner update their drawings between submissions since the same designs are used so that the numerous conditions are not reiterated for each submission. Our ARC is still concerned about the duplication of this design affecting the overall integrity of the Collier-Brownville District. Thank you.
Are there any other public comments? Hearing none, we'll enter into board discussion. Yes, sir.
If I decide to be on that house, I mean, would it come on the side of my house? But all the houses, 612.
Your house is 612.
From the 612.
Sir, is this your house? I just want to make sure we're telling. Is this your house?
Yes.
Okay, I spoke with your mom. I think my
yes.
Very nice. So yes, Mon, can you answer this question?
Yeah, the side door will be it will be fronting to it will be front to the street, but it will be close to your house. Yes.
What you mean? Like where it's become where it would be coming out of.
So,
no, this one. When the person, when they come out their door, mm-hmm. they'll be facing where they'll be able to see my mom.
My understanding is there's a front entrance that will be facing, fronting on the street.
Right.
And then on the side elevation, it would be facing your house, sir. Mm-hmm. There would be a secondary entrance, correct?
Yes, correct.
That's the third. You don't know what you're going to get there. And my mom is 87 years old, and it's disturbing to me.
Are there any other public comments? Please state your name for the record.
Janice Irizarry with CHSA. We partner with Juan to do the plans. So to address this gentleman's concern, the side entrance is actually on the other side. It's not on your house. Okay. So.
Kathy Levine, I have a question for CHSA. These are your drawings, correct? How many different designs do you have for these affordable housing units?
Martin Freddy is the one that actually does it with the city. They're his plans, and most of the plans have like different roof options and column options so that they don't look repeated. But unfortunately for the small one, the 816, there are not multiple roof plans. And so it's the one that fits on these smaller lots, unfortunately. So we don't have a ton of those.
Have they considered adding additional designs?
I can't answer that right offhand because, I mean, as Martin, it's based on him. We could just recommend other plans. I do know they did come up with another one, but it's not being put into play yet. So they're still working on the finishing touches of it. So there will be one more smaller one coming up soon.
Thank you.
Pat Richardson, we had this conversation before about these drawings, mm-hmm. and I believe that we requested more windows on the sides, and I believe you guys agreed to more windows on the sides. Why are we not seeing those drawings now?
That was actually a different point,
not much bigger, and it was in Kyler Brownsville.
No, okay.
It was four new bills on that particular agenda.
Yes, ma'am. It's the same plan. I revised it at the time that you're talking about,
yes.
I revised it because we were informed that if the setback is 3 feet and it's right on the line that we weren't allowed to have the extra windows, and we found out otherwise. And so we put the windows back in. This is what the windows have always been for this plan. And I believe part of the reason why they did not stick the windows on the side of the house in the bedrooms is because then you would still be blocking it with the bed. Like if you had a place to put the bed, that window could be blocked with the bed or a dresser, so it still would be unusable for escape to a point. We can look at adding more windows, but then you lose a wall for the bed and dressers and stuff.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for this public CHSA? Okay. Are there any other comments from the public? Are you just pulling something up, Jonathan? Are you commenting? You're just, okay, great. We'll now enter into board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. I'll call on each board member two times to speak for 2 minutes or less. Virginia?
Yeah, I still can't go along with changing the transparency as to furniture placement. I live in a house that every bedroom has three doors and at least three windows. And we have no problem with furniture. But on a serious side, I have over the years had to respond to two incidents where one, a 12-year-old child went into a bathroom during a fire and died because she panicked with no way out. The other one was a modern house in my neighborhood. When I say a modern house, it was an infill house that had limited penetration, and we, the residents, complained about the design. In that instance, three people died who were adults. I can't see the cost of a life being less than the cost of a window.
Kathy Levina, I too, I'm gonna confess, I voted for the special exception because it was affordable housing. I've always been a very big proponent of the 30% transparency. I thought we had discussed that on a prior project about adding the additional windows. I accept what code is. I understand that as a builder. However, for visual compatibility, 30% transparency, I do recommend to be visually compatible with the historic buildings in the Kyler Brownville neighborhood. They do more than just secondary egress. They add light. They add atmosphere. They add circulation, air circulation. I am 100% pro sticking to the 30% transparency standard and the basement cap.
Pat Richardson, the last time you came before us, you know, I lobbied and argued for you, you know, given that you provided the extra windows. I'm a little bit disappointed to see these drawings before us again, you know, looking pretty much like they did before. Even though you say they are small in size, there are different ways you can change them up. My best friend is an architect, so, you know, I've looked at drawings for a very long time. So I highly recommend you change these drawings up. I mean, it's Kyler Brownsville, it's affordable housing, but, you know, everybody don't want to look the same.
Kirsten Connor, I echo the windows for the most part. I would be open to approving a special exception for them only if a few more windows were added. I do, as the rest of the commission feels, I feel the same way about there's just not enough windows.
Is there continued discussion? Kathy Levina, I just snuck it in, but I do want to see the cap and the base added to the post. Any other commissioners have any further comment?
If we approve this, Pat Richardson, if we approve this with an exception, you're going to make me ride around and check all your buildings you build now. I'm going to look for those windows.
We will now entertain a motion.
Virginia Mobley, 610 West 36th Street, file 245737. I recommend approval of staff's recommendations 1 through 5. Do I need to read them all? And with the exception, with the special exception, I include approving the first one of the single detached family height, recommending 10 feet, but I do not include the exception to the 30% transparency.
Kathy Levine, I'd like to add the cap and bases on the post. Can you restate the motion, including those?
Yeah. And with the addition of all of the columns having caps and bases in the design, both the front and the side porch.
Is there any discussion on the motion?
Kirsten Connor, I second.
For the vote, Virginia?
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Continuing to the next petition of Savannah Local Initiatives, 24-005739-COA 603 West 42nd Street, new construction, small parts 1 and part 2, special exemptions requested.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. This is similar to the one we just heard, but I'll still go through my presentation. Applicants requesting approval for a new construction, small parts 1 and 2, and 2 special exception requests for an empty lot located at 603 West 42nd Street. The request also includes construction of an 8x8x10 storage shed on a concrete slab at the rear of the property. And just to kind of show where we're at with this one, it's a corner lot that's vacant. The 1916 Sanborn up through the 1955 updates show there was a structure on the property. It's not clear when this was demolished or for how long the lot has been vacant, but the Google Street View back to 2007 shows the empty lot. So just for the special exception request, quickly to go over that, the 2 special exception requests are to allow for the first story exterior expression of 10 feet instead of 11 feet, and then to allow for that less than 30% transparent features on both side facades. Staff reviewed this with the special exception criteria. 1, whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and provisions of the ordinance. The request for these special exceptions is in conformance with the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan, specifically Chapter 6, which discusses affordable housing and the provisions of the ordinance. With the special exception, the structure still reads as a visually compatible with the surrounding historic context. The applicant notes that the height of the exterior wall from the top of the foundation wall to the top of the interior wall is 10 feet, which is a foot higher than similar houses built in the vicinity in the early 2000s. It is also within the range of exterior wall heights found nearby and throughout the Kyler Brownsville neighborhood. And regarding the side elevations with the windows, the Savannah local initiatives, per the applicant stated, would have to add another 5 windows to the 42-foot long elevation at an additional cost of about $5,000. Additional windows would have to be located in the living room, which would remove nearly all wall surfaces for furniture placement. The kitchen would also not be an option because doing so would eliminate the space for wall and or base cabinets. These exceptions have been approved in the past on this type of building, and staff still supports the reason for the requests. And then for the second criteria, whether the special exception would not be detrimental to public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. Staff found they would not be for the above mentioned reasons. And just since we've kind of been through the same design, I'll just jump to our staff recommendation, which is to approve the request for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for the vacant parcel at 603 West 42nd Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards, and approval for the 2 special exceptions for the following standards: to allow for a first story exterior expression of 10 feet because the special exception criteria are met, and for the less than 30% features on the windows and doors, because the special exception criteria were met for that as well. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Are there any questions for staff? Capulet Ivana, I have a question regarding the placement of the wood picket fence. It's my understanding that the wood picket fence has to go behind the porch line. Off of Borough Street. Do you see that the picket fence, it lines up with the front of the porch versus the back of the porch, which is the line of the property? And it fronts Main Street.
We looked at this as it was within the setbacks, but what was the question?
That the fence, the 3'6" wood picket fence, needs to be positioned at the back of the porch versus the front of the porch.
We can certainly check with the applicant if they would be willing to move it.
That's not part of the standards?
I'm not exactly sure. Like, what if it's a side fence?
I'm sorry. You're looking at the wrong fence. Excuse me. Yep. Go in Burrows. Yep. Right there. Burrows. See right there? Yep. Right there. Right there. See where it lines with the front of the porch versus the back of the porch? Yep. See where that line is? It should be moved back 6 feet, essentially. It should be at the back of the porch, not the front of the porch.
Okay.
Correct? The ordinance states that?
I mean, it just more has the height values for a front or a side, and it's not past the facade of the house, so we did not consider it a front yard fence, if that's what you mean.
Okay. Thank you. I'll have to look. Any other questions for the staff?
This, if you just want a clarification.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Are there any other questions for staff? Will the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Juan Uzcategui with Savannah Local Initiative. Same as the other property, we are working with the staff with the recommendations and open to any questions.
Are there any questions for the petitioner? Hearing none, are there any members of the public that would like to comment? Okay. We will now enter into board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. I will call on each board member two times to speak for 2 minutes or less. Virginia?
Do we need to rehash the window conversation? If not, I have no comments.
Kathy Levine, I stick to my previous statement about holding to the 30% transparent features on both sides of the facades.
Pat Richardson, I hold to the same comments I had in the previous drawings.
Kirsten Connor, I do the same. I do want to reiterate the capital and the base for Kathy.
Thank you. Is there any need for further discussion?
Virginia Mobley, no.
Okay. We will now entertain a motion. Virginia, why don't you try it again?
Virginia Mobley. 603 West 42nd Street, petition 24005739, new construction, small part 1 and 2. I make a motion that we approve staff recommendation, and with the attached special exceptions, only the one in relation to the height, to allow the first story expression of 10 feet. And that's it. Do I need to add caps and bases? And that caps and bases will be added to all visible columns.
Kirsten Connor, second.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Continuing to the next petition, the petition of Star Development and Construction Company, 24-005859-C0A, 1820 Ogeechee Road, partial demolition.
So the applicant is currently requesting the demolition of this rear portion of the building. They're not requesting demo of the front two-story portion. At the time of writing this report, it's unclear when exactly this portion of the building was constructed. It doesn't appear on the 1916 Sanborn or the cadastral survey, but appears in the 1950 Sanborn. It's 1826 Ogeechee Road. 1826 Ogeechee does appear in the 1917 state directory as being under construction. We know that this is not this portion of the building because that has a different address and was listed separately. So we don't know if 1820 Ogeechee at the time was a different portion of the building or what you see now. So again, they just want to demo this portion, and it has obviously been altered greatly over time. So staff found that in this case, the requirements for demolition were met given the current condition of this rear portion at the time of writing this report. Also, staff found that COA for what's built back was not required prior to the approval of the demolition, given the current condition of, again, this portion of the building. Staff does recommend the building be documented as best possible per the city's policy and that materials be salvaged for reuse. The applicant is proposing to reconstruct the rear wall and not reconstruct the one-story rear portion at this time. Staff finds that this could be appropriate because when the building was originally constructed, this was not on the building. Again, we're not sure when this was actually added. So staff finds the reconstruction of this rear wall to be appropriate. Staff does want to see a rear elevation drawing, but based on what information that was provided, staff finds that this is appropriate. So overall, what we're proposing does meet the standards. So with that, staff approves proposed demolition of the rear section of the building and construct a new rear wall and side yard fence at 1820 ODG with the conditions that you see on the screen. The applicant is here if you have any additional questions for him as well. Board, any questions for staff?
Are there any questions for staff?
I have a question. Is
your name?
Pardon? Oh, Virginia Mobley. In the reconstruction of the wall, why is that necessary? Are they, the interior of the building is not there? Are you going to put a roof on it or just build a wall?
Yeah, no. So this entire system right here is going to be gone. So it's a reconstruction of the wall on the two-story portion that they're doing.
Between the new, the demolition and
the two-story portion, yeah.
The remaining building. Okay.
Yeah, so this thing is completely gone. So it's this wall right here.
Okay. All right.
Any other questions for staff? Hearing none, will the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hilton Dobbins, Stark Construction.
Do you have any comments regarding staff's report?
Everything is in line. We just want to clean it up, close it up.
Continue. Are there any questions for the petitioner?
Kirsten Connor, I just wanted to say I've always been really interested in what that portion of the building was. So it's interesting to me to see the inside. Just wanted to state that.
Kathy Ledvina, my question is what happened? Why did it fail?
I have no idea. I don't know. Obviously, I really don't know. They got engineer reports and they got other reports there, but I personally don't know why it fell.
Pretty significant.
Yes, it is.
Pretty alarming. So my real question, of course, is do you have plans on reusing the materials, the brick? I mean, they're historic brick. You can look at the brick.
The brick will be cleaned. Where they're going to wind up at, but they will be cleaned.
Cleaned and palleted for reuse?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any other salvageable materials?
Historic
materials?
Not historical, no. No, ma'am.
Okay. Any other questions for the petitioner? All right, thank you. Are there any members of the public that would like to comment?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC would like to advocate for a continuance due to no drawings being submitted with the petition. We feel it should be reviewed by the board to ensure that what is reconstructed is appropriate with the previous existing conditions. We would also like to advocate for not only salvage, but also the reuse of the masonry material in the reconstruction of the wall.
Would the petitioner like to comment to the public? To public comment?
Yes, that's no problem. We are going to be using a lot of the brick to close it back up. That's why I said we are going to pile it up. We're not going to use all of it. We're going to use a great deal of it when we install the doorway. And we do have drawings. I don't know why they wasn't submitted, but we have full-scale drawings for this project.
Has the MPC seen those drawings?
So I have not seen it yet. I reviewed what was submitted with the demo permit, so I have not seen those yet, but I'm more than confident staff can review it and we'll need to come back to y'all.
A question of staff, since this is a rear wall, is that something that is a staff? We can't do that anymore, can we? Okay, no question.
This is more so of a safety issue. This has been like this a long time. And if it's, you see the condition is still in that same condition, and if we want to go over The back wall, we can leave that for another date, but we do need permission to at least take this down, because the back wall is a back wall. We use the brick or we use plywood or pressure tree or whatever you use, is the wall, it's unsafe conditions.
Right. So you'd be amenable to just doing the demolition right now and coming back to this commission with drawings to be approved, or to the staff for approval? How does the staff feel?
I'll work with the staff, and they'll be coming by. I'll invite them by while we're cleaning up, and because again, it's really simple. It's only a 14 foot wall that's being closed up.
Great, thank you. Does the commission have any questions for the petitioner? Any further questions? Any other public
question for staff? Even though this has to come before us, you can't do a staff approval. Can it be an item if everything is met that is on the consent agenda?
So as part of your approval, you can delegate to staff at this meeting the review of the design of that wall that would be restored at the rear. So it wouldn't, the applicant would not have to come back or file a new application, if that makes sense.
Kirsten.
Thank you.
Kirsten Connor, so it's only if it's like a brand new application.
Exactly. Gotcha. Then it has to be, yes. But you all at this meeting can delegate to staff.
That's good. Thank
Terrific.
You.
Terrific. That's good to know.
One more thing. There's an existing wall there too on the other side. So we're just going to match it up with the existing wall on the other side. This is an addition. So really, I got to go what's already there and bring it back to course. Excuse me.
And you can clean up and secure the property while the staff reviews your existing drawings that you said you have.
Right.
Correct? And you're willing to work with staff?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Any other questions for the petitioner? Any other public comments?
Hearing none, we will now enter into
commission discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. I will call on each commission member 2 times to speak for 2 minutes or less. Any further discussion? Okay. Nope. Hearing none, I will now entertain a motion.
Virginia Mobley, 1820 Ogeechee Road, 24005859, partial demolition. I make a motion to approve staff recommendation to approve the demolition with the provisions that are listed 1 through 4, but with the addition of one that staff can review the reconstruction of the rear wall, meeting and give approval if meeting the standards.
Is there a second?
Pat Richardson, second.
For the vote, Kirsten?
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Going into the streetcar district, the petition of Alex Trujillo de Tyler, 24-005299-C0A, 16 East 39th Street, after the fact gate, special exception requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting this project. So the applicant's requesting after the fact approval for a front yard fence and gate for the property located at 16 East 39th Street. The height of both exceeds the 3 feet maximum, thus a special exception is being requested. Just for some context, 16 East 39th Street was built in 1910 and is a contributing resource. The project does not affect the historic building. The house is on a block with several two-story wood frame houses, which appear to be mostly contributing resources.
There are no other tall front yard fences or gates on this block. And just a little bit of project history, and this is prior to the install. The fence and gate were installed without a COA sometime in early 2023. MPC staff had at that time been working with the property owner who had initially applied for an after-the-fact approval after receiving a letter from Code Compliance in March of 2023. The corrective action recommended was to apply for the after-the-fact COA. The staff decision from the initial application was not completed, but the exact reasons are not known. It was likely due to needing more information. So that brings us to today for the special exception criteria, whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and provisions of the ordinance. The provisions of the ordinance state that fences in the front yard are to be 3 feet or less in height. The application notes that the fence is 5 feet and the gate is clearly taller. The intent of the standard is to ensure that fences and walls define outdoor spaces appropriately, separate the private and public realms, and add architectural interest to a building's facade. Although the fence and gate configurations separate the public and private realms and may add architectural interest, the appropriate defining of outdoor spaces is in question. There is no historic precedent in this neighborhood that would indicate a taller fence in a front yard would be historically appropriate, as front yards in this neighborhood were not typically closed in like this. The taller fence and gate do not appropriately define the outdoor space of the front yard because this configuration does not maintain a consistency of fence heights in the interest of visual compatibility and historical appropriateness on a block with so many intact contributing houses. And the second criterion, whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. The fence and gate are not detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, or function of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. However, the appearance of the adjacent uses is not met because the surrounding historic houses must be considered in the visual compatibility. Most front yards in the view shed of the property either don't have a front yard fence, and the only one that does is directly next door and within the 3 foot height limit. Since all of the above must be met, the project does not meet this criterion. With regards to the Secretary of the Interior standards, the fence and gate do not have a physical impact on the historic house itself, and their removal would not cause damage to the building. However, as noted in the special exceptions section, front yards from this time period were typically not enclosed with tall fences. Overall, the character of the house is not affected because the fence and gate are not permanent installations. For visual compatibility, the height, width, and scale standards are not met, hence the special exception request. The height is not visually compatible, as previously mentioned. The height between the gate, the columns supporting it, and the fence is also noticeably different. Which causes the whole configuration's height, width, and scale to appear off balance and exceeding any other front yard fence gate configuration seen elsewhere in the vicinity. The wood and metal materials are visually compatible, so that standard is met. For the configuration, the standard of being no more than 36 inches in height is not met. And again, for the request, staff found the special exception criteria were not sufficiently met and therefore recommend installing a fence and gate that meet the height requirements. So with that, staff recommends denying the special exception request from the standard that reads fences or walls no more than 3 feet in height may be installed within the front yard to allow for an after the fact installation of a 5 foot tall fence and gate, because the special exception criteria are not met as outlined in the report. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Are there any questions for staff? Kathy Levana, I've got one question. Because of the transparent nature of the gate, would they be able, or would a petitioner be able to just use the gate if the other portions of the fence complied? Or is the gate included in the 3.36 guidelines?
It's included.
Okay. All right. Even though it's transparent and you can see right through. Yep. Okay. That was my question. Thank you.
And I would just add, Caitlin did a fantastic job. While these may seem like minor issues, front yard fencing is incredibly important. I've spent a lot of time over the years visiting relatives in New Orleans. And unfortunately, the city of New Orleans has allowed people to put in large fences, security fences in their front yards. And the impact on their historic districts has been profound in that once what were originally landscaped front areas are now enclosed by 6 and 7 foot high metal fences. And so we were very concerned about the precedent that would be set if a fence that does not meet the standards is allowed here, what that would then do for every other house on this block. We understand their security concerns, but the standards are quite clear about what are allowed in terms of front yard fencing. There's a reason for that. As Caitlin articulated, many of these houses never even had any fencing, but the ordinance does allow, as you can see here to the right, appropriately scaled front yard fencing.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Hearing none, will the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record? Thank you.
I just want to start off by saying that I find it interesting that the staff is very concerned with there being no fences, because if you take a quick look in the blocks around this house, you'll find many different fences that exceed the standard. And I've included those pictures in the packet. Good afternoon. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to give you some important background on this fence and why we believe it is deserving of a special exception, despite the staff recommendation. It's my privilege here today to represent the petitioners, Alexander and Daniel. I actually need that copy. I'll get you another one.
It's okay.
So that one, I'll use this one. And thank you all for your service on this board and your tireless work on behalf of the city. And there's a reason why this board exists, and it's outlined throughout the Historic Preservation or Commission's bylaws, and they're so important that they're read at the beginning of every meeting. And as Ms. Mobley said, safety is obviously an important factor here, and it's going to be a theme throughout this presentation today. Now, first and foremost, my clients did not build this fence with an intent to disregard the law. They built it out of a genuine desire to improve their property, provide security, and enhance the safety of their family. And there's no evidence that this fence was erected with malice or any deliberate attempt to flout the regulations of this board or the city. In fact, quite the opposite. When they realized they needed to build a fence, and these are people that have lived in this residence for 17 years, they did so by reaching out to the city to see if they needed a permit. And they were told they did not. They didn't know what a certificate of appropriateness was. They weren't aware that they lived in a historic district, but they did build this fence with the intent to comply with city regulations. Apparently, the builder also didn't know that there were regulations. I just want to make that clear up front, is that this was not some sort of deliberate attempt to go around the city ordinances. Now, what we're asking here for today is an extra 2 feet. The fence complies in all the other aspects of the City of Savannah Code for fences, and it's not without precedent. This board and this staff in the past year have recommended many different special exceptions. We've seen multiple today, and you've recommended, and the staff has recommended, special exceptions for fences that exceed the height. I don't want to put other addresses into the record, so I'm not going to. But if you look in the packet that I've given you, I can attest to you that those are all within blocks of their residence, including one special exception for a fence in the front of a building that is much higher than theirs. It was over 7 feet. And this staff recommended approval for a fence, and they told you last year that there was going to be bougainvillea growing on this fence. I'm sure you all remember that. I listened to the meeting minutes. It seemed to be a big kind of hilarity because no one could pronounce it. I took a picture of that fence. It's in front of you a week ago. And that is a enormous fence in a front yard that this staff recommended approval. And I think that's important because if you look at the bylaws of the HPC and the code of ethics, there's supposed to be fairness throughout the process. There's fairness and equity when you're applying this law to the citizens of Savannah. And so I wanted to bring that up. I'd like to back up just a little bit because I do think it's important for you to understand why Alexandra and Daniel put up this fence and why we're here today. Alexandra and Daniel purchased their home in 2007. And so they have some history with the home. They're not house flippers. They're not looking to make a quick buck. They are people that really care about the Streetcar Historic District. They really care about their house. They emailed the city. But this is the first improvement that they've made to the exterior of their house in 17 years. So let's talk about why. Does anyone on this commission know who Kelvin Ansari was? No? Okay. Who? Kelvin Ansari? I figured you would because you talked about responding to houses. So if you remember, ma'am, Kelvin Ansari was for those who don't know, he was a Savannah police officer who was killed in the line of duty. He was killed outside of Alexandra and Daniel's house. When that happened, the person that killed Sergeant posthumously, Ansari, went running by their house. And Alexandra saw that person who killed him. And when the police showed up, she went outside and more police showed up. And I don't think she knew exactly what happened, but she asked the police to come in her house and they were telling her to get back inside. And she told them what she saw. And thank God she did, because when the police tried to apprehend that suspect who was in a yard across the street from her house, he tried to kill them too. Now, I used to be a police officer, and I've searched backyards, and I've found people that just shot and killed people. And I can tell you that by doing that, they saved police officers' lives that day, because when you search more and more backyards, you get complacent. So even then, in 2019, that's when it happened. Even then, they didn't erect a fence. But what started happening over the next couple of years, and I do have a quick one-minute video that I'd like to show you, even then, what happened is Alexandra, she owns a small business, and their house became a target. And more packages, she has cashiers, checks, more and more people started coming onto their property day in and day out and stealing property, stealing checks out of their front porch, stealing packages, going up onto their house, trespassing onto their property. That is why they erected this fence. That is why this fence was built. It was to keep their family safe. And I think that's really important to understand. This fence got built so quickly because they were tired of constantly getting things stolen. And you'll see now is that packages, when they come in, they stay. They don't get stolen. Alexandra can put her cashier's checks, in the front yard and they don't get stolen. And so that is why the fence was erected. I think they were feeling helpless and scared, and I think rightfully so, which is important because this commission in the code of ethics and the bylaws, it also talks about how you all are the ones that decide whether or not the neighborhood is changing, whether or not citizens should have the right to protect their property, and it gives you that power. And I also put in this packet that I've given to you countless stories, both in the news, both on Reddit, both on Facebook, of people talking in the Starland District, which is where they live, about packages getting stolen, fights starting, 911 being called all the time, people being hurt. If you've driven by this neighborhood, you realize that this is an ongoing problem in this neighborhood, and this is what the board, this is why you're here. You're here because you are allowed to override the city ordinances, and that's what we're asking here for today. I also just want to point out that Alexandra and Daniel, they did provide a COA. Once they realized they had to provide a COA, they did provide one within a week, and it's in the records, and the staff never acted on it. It sat there for over a year. It was never acted on, and they thought they were okay. They didn't realize that this was an ongoing issue. It wasn't until they got a summons to recorder's court that we really sat down, and we looked at the process. We went over all the forms. They paid $2,000 to do the special exception, and they're trying to do this the right way. But here's what I'm asking. We're asking that you don't make them tear this down for for three reasons. One is the financial burden. Two is the emotional impact. This fence has provided them a sense of security in their house. And this idea that it's going to all of a sudden cause this cascade of fencing to be built in the neighborhood, that rings hollow. That's without merit. This fence has been there for 18 months. Has anybody else come in front of this board in that area to build a new fence? No. And if you look at every single one of the public comments, which, by the way, I don't know if anyone knows Julie Lieberman, but she's sort of the one that spearheaded this whole project. There's a cease and desist letter that we wrote to her over 2 years ago before any of this happened. Every person in the public comments say that they're not fans of this fences, that they don't like them. No one in the public comments is going to go ahead and start building fences. So I think this idea that whether or not you approve their fence is going to somehow start a waterfall of fences being built, I would represent to you that I believe that it's wholly without merit. And you can look at the pictures that are in the packet of multiple houses within the area that have quote-unquote illegal fences. Also, finally, if somebody were to build a fence, they would still need to show that they tried to go about it the right way, which is what Alexandra and Daniel tried to do. They did try and go about this the right way. So anybody that would build a fence and say, well, they're doing it, I think this board would still have the power to say, no, they tried to do it the right way. They have legitimate safety concerns. That's why we made an exception. We're asking that, you know, you please don't disrupt their safety. They built this fence with a mindset of maintaining their property and community enhancement. It is a beautiful fence. They love the city. They want to stay in their home. They've poured a lot of time, money, resources into their residence. And if there was ever an exception to be made, I think they're very deserving of it. Pending any questions that this board may have, I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the commissioners to the petitioner?
Kirsten Connor, I do understand everything you are telling us. Some of what you have said is not in our purview to consider. We do have to take into account the ordinance, and we do have the power to recommend a special exception. You are right with that. So it's definitely, we definitely do need to take everything you're saying into consideration, but there is a limit for us. Also, I wanted to point out some of the examples you have provided to us, which we also do appreciate you bringing those to us. For instance, the Bowen Schmidt Entertainment Attorneys, that is a non-contributing structure. It also is a completely different architectural style, and it is a commercial building. So that one, in our minds, the special exception made sense. And then these other ones, I mean, I'm not going to go out and measure it with a tape measure, but most of them look to be very much shorter than what you, what is in their front yard. Additionally, I don't know what address this is, the wooden fence here. This is the front of the house, so it is technically their backyard, though it is visible from the right of way. I just wanted to point those things out, but again, we do really appreciate you bringing all of these points to us.
Would you agree with me, ma'am, that there is some structures within our presentation that do exceed the height requirements within the streetcar? Because I can tell you these are all within the streetcar historic district.
Yes. I'm not sure about this one on 37th Street and how the gate would have gotten approved. I don't remember ever reviewing that. So that might have been before my time.
Prior to 2019?
That's what I don't know. Also,
I would also just note, sorry, Jonathan, I don't mean to interrupt. As Virginia knows probably better than anyone, their fences that predate the historic district.
Yes.
And I think this
yes.
is where confusion comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the authority. If you had had this fence up when this was designated a historic district, you could have kept it for the next 200 years. So there are tons of fences that exceed the height,
right.
but they were never reviewed by the
right.
people you
and
see.
We also have to take into consideration the type of architecture and the type of building, whether it's commercial apartments, and how it was originally intended to be used. So that also affects the anything really, including fences and gates and whether or not we were to approve the special exception. I just wanted to bring those points to your attention to also think about that. I don't have any questions for you though, but we do appreciate you coming in and providing all of this to us because it is important. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And just to respond, I don't think that our entire argument is necessarily based on what, if any, of these other structures are outside of the compliance with the ordinances. I did include them in there. I do think some of those fences are newer, so they would fall within the purview. But I did mainly bring that up because there is in the bylaws that you are allowed to consider that when you're making your decision is treating all citizens fairly. So that was my intent, ma'am.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pat Richardson. I agree with everything that Kirsten says, and I agree that, you know, in the bylaws it states that we should treat every one of our situations fairly. But I do want you to understand that we are not here to usurp the ordinances of the city either. You know, we're here to adhere to and apply the standards of the Secretary of the Interior, okay? And then I also sympathize with the plaintiffs in, you know, having their packages and their mail stolen. However, they're not the first, nor will they be the last in the city of Savannah that happens to, regardless to what fence they put up. I mean, it's happening across the entire city of Savannah. But I would recommend that instead of letting Amazon drop packages in your yard, maybe they should use the drop-off box.
Well, I can tell you, ma'am, and I do appreciate that since they've put up this fence, they have got no packages stolen from their residents. And it's not just packages. She also owns a small business. There's cashier's checks that get dropped back and forth. But I will say this, knock on wood, this fence has a 100% success rate of stopping the theft of their packages.
Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's good to hear. But, ma'am, you know, we can't allow them, and then we would have to let everybody else in that district put up fences that don't apply to the standards.
I don't think you would, respectfully. I think there is a carve out here to allow that's why it's a special exception. But I understand your point. I do think you would be allowed to do them on a case by case basis, depending on what evidence was presented in front of this commission.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yes. You say that your client.
State your name for the record.
Us, Virginia Motley. You say your client has lived in the house for 17 years. When they moved into that house, I'm sure that they were told they were in a historic district.
She's saying it didn't exist at the time, ma'am.
Yes, it did.
Okay, well, I
didn't know that to the point that you're trying to make here, that we didn't know that to the point in which I'm saying certain levels by which you're speaking.
Correct. I think that it has been a historic district. However, the Historic Preservation Commission with the newly enacted ordinance did not exist until 2019.
The standards of construction were adopted at the same time that the historic district was designed or was designated, and the zoning was changed to reflect it.
I'm going to have to reserve.
What I'm saying is,
I'm just saying that we didn't know to the point you're making. We didn't know to that level
that the ordinances were enacted, and the Historic Preservation
Commission.
Savannah
Restoration, yep, employee that's saying that what Miss, with all due respect, I understand. I'm not trying to get into the weeds. My only point is that they really did this altruistically to build a fence for their safety, and they didn't do it with the idea that they knew that this was wrong.
In the meantime,
do you have a question for the petitioner?
Whether you agree with the dates or not, being in a historic district, did they not look at the standards for construction? as to the heights limits, the material, and such. As a follow-up to the pictures that you gave, with the exception of 37th Street, every one of those fences was in existence prior to 1960. I've been there since 1944, and I know, and they're all within block of my house.
I think it was pretty much, go ahead.
Well, to answer your first question, unequivocally, ma'am, they did not know that these ordinance existed. Unequivocally, they actually, and I can pull up the email, but they emailed the city. And they said
that's the question that I have for the petitioner. Right, do you have a copy of the email to the city?
And I can pull up.
Staff Jonathan, have you received a copy of that email?
I don't believe we have. I can
pull it up right now. I can tell you what it says. So they emailed the city and they said, do we need a permit? And the city said, how big is your fence? And they said, it's 5 feet. And the city said, nope, you only need a permit in the city of Savannah if your fence is going to be 7 feet.
I think that's an important email to present.
Sure. I mean, I can, if you give me 5 minutes, I can pull it up.
But I would also add that, as I understand the city's ordinances, you're correct. You do not need a permit, but it also says they cannot be more than 4 feet in height. So.
Not some of the email said, it said 7 feet.
Right. But if your clients or your contractor researched it, you would find that you are not allowed to put up a 7 foot high fence in your front yard.
I'm telling you what they tried to do.
I think that the email is pretty important to see what was corresponded. And then my other question to staff and petitioner, it's the delay, the one year delay in responding to the construction of the fence.
So this, as I understand it, this predates my time here.
I'm sure it does.
But my predecessor, I recall when I had been here for a short stint, had mentioned this. And actually, when I was going out in the field with Leah, we went by the site. So this has been on the radar for a while. I know that code enforcement, as Caitlin noted, had been in touch with the applicant. I guess what I would make the point that staff would try to make, it's not, if the argument for a special exception is we didn't know this, that can be used for anyone to knock down a building or replace all their windows. We deal with this every day. We get code enforcement. They're fantastic. They contact us every day. And often people will say to us, we didn't know we were in a historic district. We understand that, and we're not, you know, we are friendly people and we try to work with people, and we say, look, okay, you didn't understand, you know, you needed to get a COA to replace your windows. We'll work with you. We'll explain the standards. That is what we've tried to do with this applicant as well. Nobody is saying that these are bad people or they maliciously put this fence up at all. That's not at all what staff is saying. We're just saying it does not meet the standards. And if this were to be permitted, you would open the floodgates for – you were just talking about the applicant themselves said that you're supposed to treat everybody fairly. Well, how can you allow this and then the next person comes along and says, well, my packages are stolen too. You said to those other people they can have a special exception for their front yard fence. Why can't I? You're not treating me fairly. So – It actually seems pretty cut and dry. I don't think a lot of the other things that we're discussing here are actually relevant. This is pretty clear cut. There's a requirement for or a limitation on how high a front yard fence can be. This does not comply with that. That's really what's before you.
Are there any other questions of staff? Hearing none. Are there any comments from the public? Excuse me. Any other comments from the public? Do we need to read the letters into record? No? Okay.
I can, if you want, read this email into the record, ma'am. And I do have it, and I can produce it. It is from
You want to verify it, Jonathan? I don't know what to do. I have no idea.
It is from Darlene Edwards. I don't know if anyone knows.
Do we know a Darlene Edwards?
Okay.
She's where? Code compliance?
It's someone from the city of Savannah. Just to be clear, the MPC and the city of Savannah are two separate bodies.
Right. And to be clear, I mean, they don't know that, right? I mean, so it's, I'll read it. It says, good afternoon. What will be the maximum height of your fence? To which the petitioners respond, 5 feet, to which Darlene Edwards says, okay, a permit will not be issued for the fence. The fence must be 7 feet or more. However, if you have not contacted MPC, HPC for the approval to have a 5-foot fence in the front yard at that address of the historic streetcar district. So they did email the city. Mainly people's understanding of what you need to start to build is a permit. So they emailed the city. They said, do we need a permit? They said, no. They started to build. They then submitted a COA, which the staff sat on for over a year. And now we're here today, 18 months later. They tried to do the right thing.
I don't.
Excuse me, Pat Richardson. Did I hear you say MPC and HPC?
Yes, ma'am. They were told that they do not need a permit. They started building and it said reach out to the MPC, and they did that and they sent in an application, a COA.
So yes, my understanding
still
is
the after the fact. Yeah, it's still after the fact.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. 100%, the application was.
I agree with you that I think we can all agree they did not do this the right way. But they didn't do it. They
understand that.
Right. Yeah.
Are there any other questions for staff, not malicious, or petitioner?
I would just close by saying this all could have been avoided. If you read the email that you just stated, they clearly said contact MPC staff. So if they had contacted MPC staff before they did any work, MPC staff would have clearly said to them, you are not allowed to build that fence. And none of this would have happened.
I would agree with you. There is very clear proper and procedures to follow. They're not trying to escape from that. What I'm trying to show you is that they tried, as citizens of Savannah, they tried to do the right thing. They were confused. They built the fence. Then they tried to comply. And we're 18 months later and we're here now and we're asking, the structure has been up for 18 months at this point. Anything that the staff says would have made this waterfall of fences, they should show the evidence. They have not produced one single application for a special exception fence, not one single one in the 18 months that their fence has been up, not one single one. But they're standing here before you today saying, if we let this one in, then the floodgates are going to open. Where are they?
Thank you. Thank you, sir. We're going to close this conversation out.
Yes.
Caitlin, one last staff comment. She's been very patient. Jonathan?
Just for a point of clarification, the March 2023 application was incomplete. I was not involved at the time, but I'm the only staff person that was here still. And unfortunately, we don't know what other planner may have reached out, but I can tell that it was incomplete. The checklist was missing, information was missing, so it was probably requested and not provided.
Kirsten Connor, is Pam or Melanie here that they could maybe speak to it if they know anything about the background of this?
We can check with them. All I know is from what Leah told me that this had been an ongoing issue. Again, as Caitlin noted, that it was originally an incomplete application. But I want to defend the city. They clearly stated that the applicant needed to contact MPC staff before you start building a fence. So
I understand. I think we're all clear about the timeline. Are there any final questions for staff or for the petitioner? Would any members of the public like to speak? No. All right. I'll enter into board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. I will call on each board member 2 times to speak for 2 minutes or less. We'll begin with you, Virginia. Okay, we will start with Kirsten.
Kirsten Connor, while I respect the applicant's feelings, a lot of what was presented to us today, we can't consider. Yes, safety can be a concern for everybody in the neighborhood. However, putting up a security fence is not something that every neighbor can do. So I think we need to consider that. Again, I appreciate the applicants being here today and presenting what they could. But I'm leaning towards staff recommendations on this one.
Thank you, Patricia.
Pat Richardson, I want to thank you for the presentation and thank you for all the research that you did. And I want to thank staff for all their hard work and research on this as well. I agree with staff.
Kathy Ledvina, I think that the timeline is clear. I hate that the misunderstanding took place, but the fence was constructed before the initial contact with the MPC, HPC staff. You heard me before. I thought the 3'6" fence needed to be behind the primary historic building for visual compatibility standards. Virginia.
Virginia Mobley. If they started a COA process, it was their responsibility to follow up. They knew they needed to have it. If you order something and you're told it's going to be delivered and it's not delivered, you follow up with a conversation. If a contractor is supposed to be there on Monday and he hasn't come by Friday, you're going to follow through. So the burden is, yes, the staff maybe did not follow through as quickly as they should, but the burden of follow through also is on the homeowner. They knew it would be very difficult since there are signs up saying that it's a historic neighborhood, not to know that it was a historic neighborhood. And it wasn't until the city's code compliance office took them to court for violating the ordinances did they come forward requesting a special exception. The ordinance is very simple. It was created under because of the historic, yes, ma'am. It was created because of the design, the build of that historic neighborhood, and it did not include 5-foot fences in the front.
Kirsten, further comment?
I have no further comment.
Pat Richardson, no further comment.
Kathy Ledvina, the fence is the craftsmanship on that fence is gorgeous. The gate is gorgeous, and I know it costs a little bit of money. Being in the building business, I do believe you can retrofit that gate and be able to use it again with a three-foot height. Also, I believe that I just lost my train of thought. I'm going to have to stop it there. I think you can retrofit that gate and use it. It is pretty, very, it's beautiful, and it adds to the streetcar district as a complementary element in our architectural landscape.
I will have only one further comment. In all of the years of sitting on this commission, we have always held the applicant responsible for taking an active part in their application by following up and bringing information to the staff, and this has not happened.
All right. Hearing the discussion, is there any need for further discussion? Hearing none, we will now entertain a motion.
The procedure of this board and the bylaws. And please correct me if I'm wrong. Does there not need to be five people for a quorum?
There's only eight members of this commission at this time.
I understand that, ma'am. We're sticklers for the rules, so I'm looking at the rules.
That's a question for Pam, our legal.
There should be five people for a quorum.
There was five.
We started out with five,
and that's typically what when you take quorum, correct?
We typically will, if it's in the bylaws, it says that if we lose the quorum during, if we start it with a quorum and we lose a quorum during, people leave, that we still conduct the business of the.
Is it in the bylaws?
And I will look, because it is in most of the bylaws. I have it here. I will look and make sure.
We'll just take a couple minutes to breathe.
And the way these rules are written, it does say that five shall constitute a quorum. So we have to have five people. Sure. It says in the bylaws, it says number 12, five members of the PC of the HBC shall constitute a quorum. And it doesn't say anything else about losing the quorum during the meeting.
So let's continue, and then if there's a procedural issue.
We will continue. Well, no, we will. No. We can't take a vote on it.
What does it? Continue.
Yeah, everything should have been continued once we lost a quorum.
That's good to know after the fact. All right, so we continue this. We need a motion to continue it to the next meeting. Okay, who would like to make that motion? Oh, well.
The entire agenda will be continued to the next meeting. From the time we lost a quorum.
Ooh. I do remember when we last lost quorum. We lost quorum after 615 West 40th Street. That's a lot of waste of time. Pam, if you can direct us as to what to do. This is a new situation for me.
Basically, what we'll do is we will adjourn the meeting, and then everything that was on here, we'll reschedule for the next meeting, everything after we lost the quorum. Okay.
And five constitutes a quorum, even though we only have eight members on this board?
That's what the rules say, that five constitutes a quorum.
Regardless of the member, how many members we have on the board.
Regardless of how many we have.
The commission, excuse me.
No. I was going to say then the whole agenda, if we have to have five, but Darren was here.
All right. Hearing. I guess we will now adjourn the meeting, and we look forward to the next meeting. Thank you to all the petitioners, staff, and board and commission members. The next Historic Preservation Commission meeting will be held on December 18th.
Wait a minute. I have one question, please, ma'am, of staff.
Yes, ma'am.
By postponing this to the next meeting, do we fall into that window of the date of their application being it being approved because we've not acted on it? Huh? I mean, that was one of the pre-meeting arguments of this.
Technically, we acted upon it because it was within the 45 days. We put it on an agenda. If we lost a quorum, we still, it doesn't affect it. That's not what you're asking. I apologize.
Yeah, so it won't affect it.
So you're absolutely right. However, because it, like she said, because it is still active, and by the time of the next meeting, it will be less than 45 days. So it's not just the 45 days from the date that it was received, from the last.
Well, they were supposed to be on last month's agenda.
Correct. They did not follow the instructions. So therefore, that continued it. So the last amount of, or the last interaction would be today.
So it's 45 minutes, 45 days from today.
Yes, that's true. Well, because when we started the meeting, we did have the quorum. So yeah. So they were active because they were on the active agenda at that time. But once we lost the quorum, that still does not wipe that out. It doesn't take it back to the last meeting to count those 45 days.
So we're okay on dates. Okay.
The next Historic Preservation Commission meeting will be held on December 18th, 3:00 p.m., 1:30. Final meeting at 2 p.m. 2023.
Right here in the room at 1. Kristen Connor, I motion to adjourn.
Pat Richardson, second.
Thank you.